This is not your average podcast, trust me. This is IP Series, where you learn to protect and safeguard all your intellectual property so you can make a career of what you love. Join me, Rita Amrichinder, as we discuss all things intellectual property from the world of fashion, film, media, entertainment, dispute resolution, and even technology. Welcome. Hello, foodies, and all my IP friends. Welcome to episode 129 of the IP Series podcast, where I will be delving into the layers of the recent butter chicken dispute. I will be discussing the importance of IP protection for dishes. We're also going to be looking at relevant IPs, examples of IP disputes when it comes to restaurants. We're going to explore questions that have been raised about culinary innovation, tradition, and respect for dishes. There's also the broader implications of this culinary dispute, how it's going to affect creativity and innovation with respect for tradition and origin. Can and should food dishes be protected under intellectual property? And I also have tips for my food vendors, food vloggers, how they're going to navigate this digital era when it comes to creating content. There is the gastronomic journey as well, the intersection of food culture and law. So whether you're a food vendor, you're a food lover, you just love anything that has food in it, well, this episode is for you. Share with anyone interested in intellectual property, and trust me, this episode is sure to offer you some food for thought. Stay tuned and let's get into the kitchen. So, story time. I was scrolling through X a couple of weeks ago, and I came across a post by the International Trade Mark Association. I can't remember how it was couched, but basically, that was what caught my attention. I clicked on the link, took me to YouTube, and I was watching the clip where I just saw the battle over butter chicken. Mohima Hao, the log says, his founder was the original inventor of butter chicken. Da Yangaj says it has ancestral tie to the same butter chicken, and also claiming to be the original inventor of butter chicken. So apparently the matter had commenced in January. I don't know how I missed it, but here we are right now. So I said in a bit of digging, you get basically the founder of Mohima Hao and the person of Kunda Lao, can't get the last name, but pardon me, let me get it right. So it's Kundan Lal Gujraj and his cousin, also named, hold on, Kundan Lal Jaggi. Yeah, so they became partners in this restaurant. So apparently this occurred, or this whole merger occurred after the South Asian continent was split in 1947 by the British. They carved out Pakistan and also carved out the modern India. So when that happened, the two Gundal moved to modern day India. So Gundal Lal Hold on, I don't want to miss the name. Yeah, Gundalal Gujral opened his restaurant and called it Moti Mahal, and then he offered his cousin Gundalal Jaggi a partnership deal to come and work for him. Now, Moti Mahal is accusing Dagyaganj of taking credit of the creamy, slow-cooked black lentil dish called dal makhani. I mean, my Nigerian antenna is like, that's a lot of gas. But then, firewood, and I know that some of these big restaurants have permission for alternative cooking, so I'm sure they will figure out, or they already figured out how to do the slow cooking of this black lentil. They're also saying that Danga Gaj, that is this other restaurant. Now, so take note that Moti Mahal was founded in 1947, while the other restaurant was founded in 2019. That is the Dayangaj was founded in Delhi in 2019 to celebrate Jaggi's culinary legacy. So do the maths and tell me how many years difference apart. And who do you think, based on this information, should be considered to be the original creator or inventor of the butter chicken? But I'm going to talk about certain things, and then maybe that might change your decision as to who is the rightful owner. So it turns out also that the heirs of Kudan Lag Jaggi went ahead to trademark the slogan by the inventors of butter chicken and dal makhani in 2018. So they were already taking preemptive measures and also doing some pre-marketing alignment in terms of protecting their intellectual property. So they've gone ahead to trademark a year before they actually launched or opened their own restaurant, now called Dayangaj, in 2019. Now, how both parties tell their story raises issues around traditional knowledge, trade secret, respect for origin, traditions, and just like every other intellectual property disputes that you may be aware of, there's always some sort of a form of available remedy and enforcement procedure that intellectual property that an IP owner or a creator or an inventor of a work enjoys under the law. Now, in this case, now Mohima Little Moti Mahal, yeah, is suing is suing Dayangaj and is seeking a 20 million rupees, seeking 20 million rupees as compensation, which is equivalent to $240,000 and equivalent to I had to do Google Maths for this. I just typed in 20 million rupees to Naira and I got 287,162,001 Naira. And that is also equivalent to 188,000 pounds. So they are saying they're suing them for copyright infringements and unfair competition. But then there were other things that I also picked out, which I'm going to list out first. Issues on whether it was false advertising based on the already registered trademark slogan. We're also going to be looking at the fact that Moti Mahal, rather, is asking the court for an injunction to prevent and stop Dayangaj from claiming that they invented the butter chicken and Dal Makhani. Now, when you're dealing with intellectual property, when the real owners or the inventor or creator of your work lay claims to the work in question, it can be monetized or commercialized, which can then outlive the creator and be transferred to the heirs or successors in title if there is a will. For the heirs to enjoy IP rights, I don't think it's automatic. There's due process for all of the things, but now we have an idea of the backstory of our conversation for today. Let's now delve into matters arising, some things I read. I think I might also include some of the issues I had raised in the carousel I shared last week. So bear with me. Now, before I delve into the issues or matters arising, take note that this case filed by Otima Hau is a 2,752 pages document. So you have to, haven't seen a link to be able to access this document, but if I had to get my hands on it, this is going to be like the largest document I've ever reviewed for my podcast or for any of my IP series content. But like I previously mentioned, the case was filed or commenced hearing on January 16th, and it was adjourned to 29th of May for continuation. Now, my first issues or matter arising is, are there IP disputes over inherited knowledge in the food industry? What other similar disputes has bettered the food vlog business or gastronomy tourism, exploring the interplay in the kitchen and gastronomy tourism as well? I'm going to explain that later. Successful IP protection for traditional foods. Can culinary heritage and cuisines be protected as intellectual property? Now, when I was also doing my research about this case, I think the first thing that came to my head was the West African Jollof War, and I was also excited when I saw it in one of the publications I was reading. We already know this thing where we're always like, oh, if it's not Nigerian jollof, it's not jollof. But the real owners or the originators or creators of jollof rice is the Senegalese, and it has been touted to be like the best. Ghanaians will come and say, oh, Charlie, mine is the best, but I'm in Nigeria and I'm going to say Nigerian jollof. I mean, for now, until I test the Senegalese jollof, I'm going to say Nigerian jollof is. I've not to say Ghana jollof. Oh God. Anyways, so I came across two cases that actually stood out for me: the West African jollof dispute, which is not much of a dispute because no one has. I mean, it's always like a banter for us, not like anyone come to say, oh, if you guys use this, we're going to do this, because the ingredients are different, the process, the rice they use, everything is different. So there's the kimchi dispute as well between China and Korea. And if you are a South Korean fan, you love South Korean series, movies, I'm sure you've heard so much about kimchi, 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 kimchi. But apparently, I found out in the course of doing this research for this podcast that there was actually a kimchi dispute between China and Korea. So, which now made me, I think there's a series on kimchi. So I think the South Korean highlights the topic when it comes to gastronomic tourism, trying to sell people a particular product, making them realize that this is ours, this is not for any other person, we are the originators. So basically, culinary or gastronomy tourism involves people visiting food producers, attending food festival, I came across a post by, I think it's a Payami something, the guy that does food review thingy in Nigeria, and had some social media lock. Okay, his account was locked. Let me not even bite my tongue. But yeah, so attending food festival, going to restaurants. Now we have a lot of food vloggers, content creators visiting restaurants, telling us where to get the best food, how it tastes, cost. There's also issue as to dressing to attend or visit some of these restaurants based on their policies and stuff like that. Unique locations to sample special food. For instance, if you're coming to Port Harcourt, where I'm based, we're talking about bole. I mean, any bole that's not from Port Harcourt is not original bole. Do with it. Now we have what's that thing? Pium pium. There's a fisherman soup. There's a whole lot. I mean, Nigeria is really, really blessed with a lot of dishes. So imagine an immigration like kind of thing when Nigeria, God forbid, Nigeria not speaking Jesus. But imagine the scenario that happened with the South Asian continent split, that had people traveling and picking a side. Either you go to Pakistan or you go to modern day India. And according to what I read, it's been said that the butter chicken, which it was alleged to have originated in modern day Pakistan, it's not popular, but it's popular in India. And some writers were like, maybe the creators of the butter chicken were trying to appease the taste bud of the British who were still in India, you know. But gastronomy tourism, it's very popular now, especially in this digital era. I mean, the lockdown did a lot, but post lockdown, a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, I mean, people are traveling, going to experiment, to experience several things. I think CNN has a couple of those series, and also WIPO has a couple of those series as well. So check it out. You're going to be exploring ingredients, and I think that's one of the things that people were trying to highlight when they're talking about the Payami guy, that he wasn't really giving like good critics. But I'm not going to delve into that, okay? But gastronomy tourism will focus on exploring ingredients. You're going to go to the farm, get the ingredient, cook it. There's this black lady married to a Chinese guy. I recently stumbled on her content on TikTok, and I really enjoyed the behind the scenes of how, you know, all of these products and flavors just, you know, get mixed up. Production, traditional cooking tools, culinary customs. I know the Asians have a lot of culinary customs. For here in Nigeria, some food requires that we use our hand to eat, etc., etc. So that's about that for gastronomy tourism. But now let's focus. Oh yeah, I was going to tell you guys about the kimchi dispute between China and I'm seeing the dispute against Korean traditional side dish kimchi between South Korea and Japan, and not China. I don't know which one is correct, but kimchi is said to be like a garlicky, peppery, pungent, pickled cabbage, which represents Korea, and it's considered to be like their national dish. But then there was this dispute where, so I'm seeing China, I'm seeing Japan, but whichever one of the Asian countries, we are fighting themselves over this dish. And you know, yeah, it said that it was a huge amount of kimchi was imported from Korea, from Japanese food companies. They decided to make a Japanese style kimchi as kimchi. I think there's also issue as to the name, because you're kind of misleading people to think that the kimchi is Korean kimchi. It's kind of like when we're saying that we have people now, or there's been conversations that Nigerian yam is being exported as Ghana yams. Don't know. You get. But this dispute broke out as far back as 1996 when Japan proposed designating Japanese kimchi kimuchi as official Atlanta Olympic food. So if you have the time, please check that out. But it's interesting to see that there are several other cases that have made people come out to say, oh no, you can't take this from us. This belongs to our people, or this belongs to our family, and stuff like that. So intellectual property disputes over inherited knowledge around dishes would focus on production, creation of the ingredient, recipe, branding, resources in or measures being taken to protect the confidential process of making that particular dish, which in this case would be the butter chicken. Then you also have the commercialization and monetization aspect born as a result of intellectual activities, which include marketing, labeling, branding, protection of the characteristics and quality of the butter chicken, because this was in New Delhi and not Pakistan. Protection of culture, traditional knowledge, research and data, investment related issues that contribute to the development of an economy. I mean, the butter chicken, if you read the story, you find out that the should I say the first person now? So Moti Mahal had celebrities, very important persons coming to his restaurant to try out the butter chicken. So I mean, someone that has that much fame, recognition, that has put in the work is actually going to have certain issues when it comes to putting his feet down and stating, I am the first creator of this dish. Now remember or recall I have stated that he offered his cousin, who bears the same or similar first name with him, Gundal Lal. Yeah, Gundal Lal Gujraj against Gundal Lal Jaggi. So he had offered him some sort of partnership. So we're going to take into consideration certain elements when you want to go into partnership or collaborations with people in your food business, whether you own a restaurant or those moving trucks, or you own a YouTube channel or anything, whatever it is you're doing, there are certain things that you need to do to protect your signature dish, and this will involve a combination of legal strategies and practical measures. One, protecting your signature dish as a trademark will require that you keep that secret how you make the Nigerian jollof, yeah, or how you made the Moti Mahal butter chicken, or the Dangrajad. Oh God, forgive me. Oh, hold on. Hold on. Or how you make the what I wrote it down somewhere. How you make the Dan Yagaj version of the butter chicken. I think, okay, I'll leave that for later. Who can have access to this recipe at the end of the day? It's a secret that whoever's going to have access to it is also obligated to keep. So there's that fiduciary duty. Then confidentiality agreement require that employees and suppliers sign this agreement that binds them to maintain the secrecy of your recipe. Now, if you're also considering partnership, you also need to include a non-disclosure agreement, non-disclosure clause rather, to that stating that your partner, which in this case now would have been Gundal Lal Jaggi, is bound by the terms of the partnership agreement that has a non-disclosure clause to maintain the secrecy of the butter chicken recipe. Then employment contracts, you have to include specific terms so you protect your intellectual property. You also need to highlight the difference between what will be considered to be know-how. You may also want to include restrictive covenants so that you're protecting yourself. Then there is documentation. Keep documentation of the recipe in secure location. There's this popular IP myth about how about the famous Coca-Cola recipe. There's also the story that the only two persons who own the recipe and they did not travel in the same flight. So all that information about your recipe should be marked as confidential. You need to also educate your employee on the importance of keeping a secret, keeping your recipe a secret. They should be aware of what constitutes a trade secret, the consequences of revealing such information. And for every food related dispute that I've come out where one party is trying to claim be recognized as the original creator of that particular food or dish or cuisine. It is also very important that you consult and speak with a lawyer that specializes in food and law or intellectual property, so they help you understand the best way to protect yourself in the industry, and so that you don't have issues of someone dragging or contesting your title at the end of the day. The example of IP dispute that restaurants and food vloggers or bloggers would encounter. First is recipe theft or flavor theft. I've seen a couple of videos on Instagram where food vloggers, content creators are like, here's my recipe. Some actually mention everything, some do not, which I'm going to allude to at some point. Similarities in names, business name, menu, tagline, slogans, similarity in pictures, videos, which are sometimes posted or reposted without any acknowledgement of the original creator of the post. Similar websites, interior. I think there was, it wasn't, this wasn't related to food bloggers, but this was between an architect who had his architectural designs, the court said it was stolen, but had his architectural design replicated for another cafe in South Korea, because I talked about it in my podcast. Let me know. Hold up. Wait a minute. I did though. But I can't seem to find the picture. Yeah, I think it's a Soul Cafe. Please let me find it. Okay, even if I don't find it, but yeah, you guys can please check it out. I talked about it last year when the court gave its ruling. There's a podcast version, there's a carousel for it as well. So you see, too many gifts for everyone. You have, yes, found it. Yeah, the Copycat Cafe, how a Korean court upheld the intellectual property right of an architect. That's the case. What episode? Episode 118. This is episode 129. So please check that out. Then you also have theft of customers' list, producers' list, customer details, exposure to counterfeited products, or buying expired goods, or buying products that the shelf life, perishable goods that the shelf life are not in compliance with what the regulatory body has advised or the industry has recommended. They're non-compliance with advertising guidelines, marketing guidelines, IP policy in terms of respecting one's creativity, exploring commercialization models such as licensing or franchising, you know. Then the way forward for me, I would say, is using ingredients that no one else can get, which entails you putting up preventive measures or secrecy on how you get your product, or you get to become the sole legal producer or importer of that particular ingredient. You may also consider exploring exclusive community licensing. I know that some food or restaurant don't like to, like, you know, share information. Oh, this is where I got my product, etc., etc. But in an era where everyone's trying to digitize or commercialize every content, you know, you have content creators or food bloggers or what they call restaurant owners or the chefs that work with them listing out ingredients, but then they won't tell you, I got you for that. I think one time someone had mentioned to me that she had attended one of this cooking training and the tutor even gave them list of where she was getting it. I mean, that's really generous of you, but you know, IP wise, is that really the right thing you should be doing? No one really knows. You may also consider embracing farming or the agricultural industry so that you get quality products. Then again, you need to be beware of reverse engineering, leaving out incomplete ingredient or recipe is not a good thing. I mean, anyone can figure out that thing. that would improve on your own recipe and make their own bang, and they go viral. Make the dish with love. Love is all the matters, So we'll be wrapping up in a couple of seconds. So before I get out of the kitchen, I'm going to share a couple of posts which I shared in the carousel about culinary heritage and IP. So at Rainmaker 1973 says, fun fact, the fast food version of the döner kebab is a dish of Turkish origin created and popularized in the 1970s West Berlin by Turkish immigrants. Then at PH Netizen Hoff says, Caesar salad is not an Italian salad. I was shocked. You wouldn't find it in Italy. Nonetheless, it is a salad that was popular in Italian American restaurants. It was invented in the 1920s by Caesar Cardini, an Italian chef who owned a restaurant in Tijuana, Mexico, originally from California. Isn't that beautiful? Then you also have chicken tikka masala was supposedly invented by a Bangladesh immigrant in Scotland who added Campbell's tomato soup to make the chicken less dry. And then there was a follow-up post about how Ali Ahmed Aslam, who was 77, dies, credited with inventing chicken tikka masala. And it goes further to say a Glasgow restaurateur, he was part of the rise of the British Curry House and played an essential part in its history. So immigration has, we have a lot to tend to when it comes to immigration, because the blend of culture, food, cooking, talent, etc. Also not popularly commonly known, tacos al pastor were invented by Lebanese immigrants to Mexico. Ah, that one blew my mind. And that was by Daniel Fong. Then you have a post by at Kaine or Ken, who stated that ramen was invented by Chinese immigrant by Yokohama trying to recreate La Mian. Then there's a Wikipedia post which talks about the origin of ramen being traced to the Yokohama Chinatown in the early 20th century. The word ramen is a Japanese borrowing of the Chinese word lamian, meaning pulled noodles. But the dish evolved from southern Chinese noodle dishes reflecting the demographics of Chinese settlers in Yokohama. Ramen gained popularity in Japan, especially during food shortages following World War II. In 1958, instant noodles were invented by Momofuku Ando, further popularizing the dish. So I think, yeah, there's a follow-up now. I'm going to post it. And someone stated, that is at J. Quintana stated, Momofuku Ando didn't invent instant ramen. The first person to get the patent was another Taiwanese student in Japan. Ando bought the patent from him. The real inventor, though, is someone in a Taiwanese fishing village. So, I hope this little story I'm telling you guys is making a lot of sense. Indeed, jollof was Nigerian jollof still the best. Yeah, gonna say that again. But behind every dish lies a recipe, a whispered secret passed down through generations, as we've seen from the Gandu family, the Gandula, Jigar and Gandu Lal Gunraj, whose grandparents passed down or whispered these secrets through generations. But the question at the end of the day is, can recipe be protected? What have we learned so far in everything that I have stated? So, fellow foodies, I don't know, I think there's someone that keeps coming to my head when I keep saying these foodies. There's someone that says, hi foodies on Instagram, very popular. But anyway, so fellow foodies, let's feast on memories one bite at a time. I mean, for every meal that I've eaten, how did people come up with this egusi? Or there is Port Harcourt fish, there's River State fisherman soup, and there's Bayelsa fisherman, and I've eaten boots. I'll not lie, I prefer the Bayelsa version, but it is what it is. So anyways, I thank you guys for listening to me today. I hope you've learned something. I hope that as we're traveling to regions that are known for their culinary heritage, we're exploring traditional eateries, historical market, participating in food tours and workshops, volunteering in food preservation projects if we must, celebrating food rituals and festivals. Teach others what you've learned. Share your passion for culinary heritage with your friends. Encourage them to appreciate the stories behind the dishes they enjoy. Remember, every plate carries a piece of history. By savoring and preserving culinary heritage, we honor the flavors that bind us across times and borders. And with that, we've come to the end of episode 129. If you enjoyed listening to me, please like, share, subscribe, and follow IP Series. Thank you for listening to IP Series podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. You can also follow us on Instagram at IP Series with Esmeraldo ESQ or Twitter at IP Series 1 or send us an email to ipseriesinfo@gmail.com. Until next time, stay tuned and stay informed.